We left off on Daf Salach Mabez. Once again, the Mishnah was listing off one after another of the Darkei Shalom, the different takanos that were made in order to enhance peace in the world. So the last off, right in the middle of Salach Mabez, it's a little bit less than halfway now. The first one line is Bris for Eretz Yisrael. There are two dots: Ba'arvin, the Ba'ez Yashar, and Darkei Shalom. So the Mishnah says that when you make an Eruv Chatzeres, we mentioned that. Whenever you have an area that, although it's surrounded by walls and by wires and poles, so it's technically a Rishus HaYochid, so in a Torah you would be permitted to carry there. Whenever it's a somewhat of a public kind of an area, whether it's an entire city or whether it's an apartment building or whether it's to a house that's sharing a courtyard, so in the Rabbanon, you have to join together with the Chalros or Baksimatzes. You have to symbolically declare that they're basically one house. Everybody puts their food in one house, so it's considered to be one quasi living space. So that's the takana of Shlomo HaMelech of Erev Chatzeros. So the Erev Chatzeros should remain in the same house that it always was after Beit HaKishon. It's not switching houses. My time. What's the reason? Elav Mishum Kavod. If it's because that we're afraid that the person's going to get insulted. Here he had the Erev Chatzeros for the last 10 years, and now get taken away from him. So he's going to consider that to be an affront to his honor. So he's going to get into an argument with you. And he says, "Man, that's probably not the reason." It was a shipura. A shipura. There are two opinions. Rashi puts two opinions. So one opinion Rashi says is that it was the shofar that was used on Erev Shabbos. Shabbos, they used to blow shofar right before Shabbos started in order to tell everybody what time it was. People had enough clocks, so they would always remind everybody when Shabbos was going to start. That's, of course, where the minute today Yerushalayim came, the blowing of the sirens. The Shabbos sirens were a throwback to the older days of blowing the shofar. So the shofar would be in the house of the given Rav, whoever was in charge of the community, would have the shofar. So that shofar switched hands a lot of times.
At first, this guy is a post chauffeur like on Friday. Right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's what he used to do. I mean, today, I mean, Mishnah is a little bit bigger. I mean, those days, the towns were a little bit smaller. But anyway, so this chauffeur went different places. So first, it was Rabbi Yehuda's house, and then Lady Yitzhak went to Rabbi's house there. So
the fact that Shlomo Melech made the Gezerah, does it have a different level of chiyuv than, let's say, rabbinic to? Between Torah's Moshe Mishnah.
Oh, very good. Excellent. So this particular takana probably not, because this is actually not mentioned in Tanakh. Takanas that are mentioned in the Nevi'im Ksuvim, according to some, may have a higher level than a regular din derabbanan. This particular one is not. And therefore, this is probably just on par with any other din derabbanan. The Rambam writes that fundamentally, there's no difference whether the takana is made by Yehoshua ben Nun or made by Rav Ashi. Says there's no real differences in terms of halacha. If something's mentioned in Kisra Kodesh, then according to some, there may be a nuance of difference. So comes the says clearly this wasn't an issue of cover, that they were allowed to switch around. 1 year I get the shofar, 1 year you get the shofar. Rashi quotes a fascinating
shofar. So that's why it was so important to have the Megillah as far as Kisra Kodesh, because it elevates its status within.
I mean, again, that according to some opinions, it elevates the halachic status. So yeah, that is correct. Rashi quotes a fascinating shot from Rav Shri Ragon, who said Rav Shri Ragon was a fascinating individual. He was the Goli, his name was Shri Ragon. He was the Rosh Hashiva in Bavel for many years. He lived until the age of 100. He was the father of Haigon. So Haigon took over the Rosh Hashiva title at the age of 70 when his father passed away. So Rav Shri Ragon was not just a major figure in Bavel. He wrote one of the most important works of the time of the Gaon, called the Igeres Rav Shri Ragon. It was a letter that was written to a Jewish community in North Africa. The Jewish community sent to Bavel the question about how the Mishnayos were written and how the Toseftas were arranged, the Brises and the Gemaras, and they asked a lot of the history as to, it was almost like the development, so to speak, of the Tosh Rav Peh. Rav Shri Ragon, because he was the Rav Shiva, had access to all the yeshiva files. Everything was written. We used to always, it was like the retail office, like everything was still in the file cabinet. And he gives you dates, which exact dates. This is the year that this Gaon died, and this is the year that this issue happened in the yeshiva. But remember, he's reading off of the literally hundreds of years of history. He had access to the written file. We don't have the only text that we have now of that is this letter of Rav Shri Ragon that we still have today. So anyways, in Rav Shri Ragon's works, So he writes that the shofar that the Gemara here was talking about is not the shofar of blowing. It's the shofar. The Gemara used to use the term shofar as literally like a tzedakah box. It would be shaped like a little bit like a shofar, like a receptacle, and they would use it to collect money to the yeshiva. That's what he wrote. That who knows the shofar and davar suchu the yeshiva. Again, Shuga, as the Rosh Hashiva, was well aware of the financial proceedings of the yeshiva. So that's what this referring to. It was the main tzedakah box of the yeshiva. So it would switch to different hands. So the Gemara says about what do you think it's the shofar, the tzedakah box. The bottom line is it could switch from one place to another. And that's not considered to be a problem. Elamishim Chashad does. The Gemara says, the reason why the Eruv should not switch is because of Chashad. People are going to think that there's no Eruv in town. And for 20 years, the Eruv is in Reuben's house, and then also we switch to Shimon's house. People aren't going to necessarily know that. And people are going to come and see that people are carrying without an Eruv, and they're going to start arguing with people, and people are going to start yelling at each other. What? Is there an Eruv? There's no Eruv. This is going to lead to a Machlokes. So therefore, they said, keep it wherever it is, just keep it where it is. Everybody should know. Then there was another statement in the Mishnah that if you have a stream of water and the water is flowing into different pits along the way, so the pit that's closest to the stream, so it should be the one to fill up its pit first. It should be able to siphon off some of the water first, and then the next one afterwards. Rashi explains that there's no real reason for this. It's not like the guy who's closer to the stream of water has kedima din mamonos. It's just you have to come up with some kind of a system. If you can have everybody's going to be, closing off the river and damming up the river at the same time, it's going to lead to a fight. So what are you going to do? So flip a coin. So an arbitrary way. It's you go to the first guy first, etc. Sometimes there's certain things that Daki Shalom that make sense. That we have to be sack in this way. Taka makes sense. Sometimes Daki Shalom just simply have a system. Otherwise, it doesn't make any. Otherwise, you can have a fight. There's a famous discussion in the postgame about a lot of different kedimos in terms of a davening. This guy's a that, he's an old for this, he's an old for that. Who comes first? So the Rav Shmuel later Acharon will give you a whole pecking order, a whole list for the Gavoyim as to who comes first. Some of it is not written stone, it's just that the post had to come up with some kind of an eitza, otherwise we'll get a fight. So there's a story, I think it was about the Rav, I'm not sure, I think the story goes about the Rav, that they asked him, who has kedima for such and such? Yes, some arbitrary question, some guy by technicality. This guy's a bar mitzvah, this guy's an offer, whatever, who gets the... So the Rav supposedly answered, flip a coin. So he said, Rebbe, flip a coin. The Book of Rav is a whole list of... So the Rav apparently said something like, I think the Book of Rav got his list, he also flipped a coin. And some of them are not absolute, chayyavos. The most important thing is actually, that's what I always tell people whenever they come to ask these kinds of shalom, I say, the biggest that can show them is give it to the other guy. That's the problem. Now you have two guys fighting each other. Each one wants to be that can show. The Gemara says, what are you doing? You have the pit that's closest to the stream of water. So it burns. Where's the following discussion? The day you have a river. Rav Amit Tassoy Shal Samai Beration. I was going to explain a little bit why this is or is not the same case in the Mishnah. So Rav says that the people on the bottom of the river, they have the right to get the water first. That the top guys have the right to get it first. So there are ways, there are systems they can close off the river and have the river divert a little bit to their fields before it gets down to the bottom. So do they have a right to do that? So Rav says that you got to let the river flow normally, and whoever gets at the bottom of the river, when the Mississippi goes, the guys in New Orleans, they get it first. And according to Shmuel, the guys up in St. Louis, they're the ones who get it first. The top guys get it. So come to Gemara and says, "Bid the mazel kuli avol pligi." If the river is just flowing and nobody has to dam up, nobody has to close up the river. So then, Rashi explains. So ain and sochas and all the dolim holkim. If it's not necessary to destroy the flow of the river or anything, so then kol rose from the yidla. Whoever wants to run over to the river and take a bucket and take it water is a day. So that's not what they're talking about. Keep plinking with Meska or Reshkuye. The problem is that each one of these guys, they want to close up the river. They want to dam up the river, divert the water for a little bit. They want to actually physically do something to the river. That becomes the question. So Shmuel Ami Losha Subai Beresha. So Shmuel says that the guys higher up, they have the first cracks at the water. We're closer. So we're closer to the source of the river. We should get the water first. Rav Amar, and Rav says the source of liberation. Rav says that the bottom guys get the water first. So leave the river alone. Let the let HaKadosh Baruch Hu's course of nature go. The river flows down, and we'll get it. You want to come back after we get our water? You want to go play around with the water? So do whatever you want. But we have first dibs at this water.
So according to Rav, the top people don't have access.
According to the Rav, that you have to just let the water run, let the water go, whatever it does, and then the bottom guys finish irrigating their fields. So then, if the top guys want the extra water, they let them go back to the river, and then they'll dam up the water. But they have no right to do that until the bottom guys are satisfied. That was Rav's sheet. Rav said you have to let the water just run natural its course first, and then afterwards you can play around with it. So Tanan, Gemara seems to bring a Rav from a Mishnah. This topic seems to be. Appears in the Mishnah itself. Tanan Borak of the Abba Mismali Risha of Medak Yishalom that the Mishnah says that the pit that's closest to the stream of water, it gets first. So that seems to contradict the Rav. So Tirgum Shmuel leaving the Rav. So Shmuel came to the rescue. Shmuel came to answer the Mishnah according to Rav. The Amma Bisalechas Api Boro. That no, that's talking about that. I don't have to do anything for it. It's going on its way. I don't have to close it up. It just fills up into my pit first. So Yochim al neighbors. What's the chiddush of Mishnah? If I'm not doing anything, I'm sitting in my pit, and you're sitting next to your pit, and the river's flowing. So why would anybody think that I'm not allowed to just let it flow naturally? So Mal the Tema. So I would have thought Matzi Amalei Sachem Niskav Ashkim Hindaza. So I would have thought that your mechuyav to actually close up your pit. I would have thought the guy on top must block the water and just let him just get a little bit of water in some other way, but not having the whole water flow in. Kamash Balad. The river's flowing normally. It can't stop a guy from. Mississippi's flowing, so I'm mechuyav to stop the Mississippi flowing. If I want to start to play around with it and try to divert the water, that's what the machlekes is. But if I don't have to divert the water, I'm the lucky guy. I'm closer to the river, so you can't stop me. So Amar Rav Huda bar Tachlifa Hashlo it mehuchs alokamar lokamar. The question at the bottom line is: you don't have a final psach halacha on this. What do you do between Rav and Shmuel? There is no clear cut halacha. Call the old gemar. The American kuntz like it sometimes does indeed. Whoever's tougher, whoever's true, literally, all of it's stronger. Whoever gets first path gets first guy. Whoever goes first wins. That's it. We can't give a psach halacha on this.
Wait, the psach halacha was just darkei shalom. In other words,
whatever
they said.
Right.
There's no arbitrary right or wrong.
So that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying there is no psach. Rav was saying in the case, not in the case of the Mishnah, in the case where it's a real question of actually having to, do I have a right to close off the river, to let the water come into my field first? So Rav said that you can't do that. Shmuel said you can't do that. That was a machlok. That was a machlok in the Mamunas. So the Gemara says, we don't have a clear cut psak in that. So in that area of Allah, we don't know what to say. So we tell you whatever happens, happens.
But Kodan Magvar is the opposite of Darkesha.
Right. Well, it depends what Kodan Magvar means. Machlekes have shown him, what does Kodan Magvar mean? So some Rishonim say Kodan Magvar means you have to bring like a raya. And other Rishonim, which is hard to bring a raya, there's no psak. Other Rishonim say Kodan Magvar means you got to bring your muscles. So again, we obviously don't want them to physically assault one another, but the bottom line means that. Whatever he's going to do, he's going to do it. Yeah. No one has the right to take it against him because you're siphoning off the river to your field. Rav Shimon bar Ashi also came to Abaye. So one time, Rav Shimon bar Ashi came in front of Abaye. Amalei, he said to him, lo sur my bidna. He said, I want to learn with him. I want you to come and spend time learning with me. Amalei, isli idna l'didi. So he said, my own seder, my own chumus, I got enough time to learn with everybody. Lo sur my bidna. So Rav Shimon bar Ashi was pushing him a little bit. He said, "Let's learn at night." So Amalei Isli Ma'ilash Kudim. I got to work at night. He said, "I got a field. I learned during the day. Rav Shimon the daytime. I got to work the night hours, the night shift. So I have to water my irrigate my fields at night." So Amalei. So Rav Shimon bar Ashi with a chap said, "Ana Mashkina Leila Ma'ar Ma'ayav." Your mom said, "I'll do the work during the daytime for you. I'll irrigate your field." But Losa Ma'aleliya. And he said, "Then you'll be Mechavrusa at night." Not a bad. I imagine if Rav Shimon bar Ashi was significantly younger, I'd do a better job than Abaye in terms of irrigating the field. So I'm like, he's good, okay, he said, I'm asking. So there were Rav Shimon bar Ashi was a little bit maneuvering over here. He was trying to get Abaye the best deal. So he went to the guys who were at the top, whose fields were closer to the top of the water. So he said to them, the Soisha Sumai. He said to them, the bottom guys are about to get the water first. I went to the bottom guys. He until the bottom guys, and the top guy's going to get the water first. So everybody started to figure out what to do, so he ended up taking the water. So Tysus points out that it wasn't exactly usur what he did. It wasn't the nicest thing to do. And therefore, the Gemara says, just come in the Abaye. When he came to Abaye, he was trying to get the best deal for the Rashiva. So when he came in front of Abaye, and Abaye found out what he did, Abaye was not happy with it. Even again, it wasn't Gezela, it wasn't usur, but Abaye felt that it wasn't Yosh, it wasn't proper Nidos. He said, you did to me for like two people. It means you bumped off the bottom and you bumped off the top. For lo taminu Abaye l'peredai shasa. Abaye refused to use the fruit of that year. All the fruit that grew in the field. We don't know yet whether Rav Shimon Rashi lost the chavrusa. I'm not sure. But Abaye was not happy with what he did, and he felt that it would be a poor midos for him to even benefit from the fruit that came about through a little bit of taking advantage of some other people. I know Bnei Charmuch, there were people in the town of Charmuch, the Ozul Karberation, the Shanbasa, that they went and they started to dig in the front, the top of the river, at the mouth of the river, the Shanbasa, Vadrua Vishadrua Vishilay Nara. And then they dug in such a way that they diverted the water, and now the water came back to where they needed it. So also Eloy Lekamei Dabai, so the people in the top of the river got upset at them, and they came to complain. They came to Abai Amulay, and they said, Kamaskil and Aaron. He said that they're ruining the river. So again, I don't know enough about the geology and all the nuances here. Rashi tries to explain to you that if you make it deeper, it's gonna interfere with the flow of the river. I'm not sure what the details are. But Amulay, so Abai said, Karba Dayu Tveipurta. So Abai said, if you go even a little bit further, he said, you can fix it. Whatever they did is no big deal. They can have their water, and you'll make it a little bit deeper, and it'll be all right. So the people in the town said, if we do that, it's going to interfere with the flow later. It's going to ruin the fruit at a certain point. So the bottom line is that Kozman, that what they were doing was not, was not harming anybody else. So Kozman hates, let them do whatever they want. But the minute that it was interfering with other people's possibility of eventually using the water later, So Abai Sel told to the people who had diverted the water, you better stop what you're doing. It means you can do a little kuntzum here and there, as long as it doesn't interfere with somebody, but it can cause them monetary harm, so that you're not allowed to do. The Tzudas Chayv Yovel Dagesh Rebbe Chuzi. The Mishnah mentioned that if I set up traps for wild animals or for birds or for fish, and then the animal, the fish, etc., gets caught in the trap, so nobody's allowed to take those things out of the traps with Beit Dagesh Shalom. So I wasn't really Zeichon. The fact that I had a trap set and something got caught by my trap, that doesn't make me the rightful owner in HaTorah. I didn't make a kidney on the object, but it's still, come on, give me a break. I said a fish net. You know, don't take my fish out of my trap. That's not nice. So the Gemara explains that the uzlev uare kuliyam lepligi. So there are different kinds of traps. So if the trap that I use has a receptacle to it, so the animal gets caught inside this vessel, so then I actually am kona the animal with a kidney kli. Aloch is, let's say, so I have a car. So I'm going to put something into my car. So that the car, if I own the car acquires for me anything that's inside it. I have a basket, and you put an apple in the basket. So a kli is considered like an exception of my chatzer. And so even though it's not literally in my property, but my kli is halachically like my chatzer, and it's kona for me. So if I have a trap that has it inside to it, like uzleis and uris, again, if I saw uzle uri, I wouldn't know what it was. But Rashi says it's a shasta shachuta. It's like a net of threads that literally has a toch to it, has a receptacle to it. And Uri also, again, is a yunkash falaz, in case you want to catch with your old French. So it's, again, some kind of a trap that has a receptacle part to it. So Kulyamu Pligi, for sure, that's a real Kenyan. Ki Pligi Balachi the Kukri. But if I just simply put something like a bit, something that gets caught in the animal's mouth or something, or a Kukri, other kinds of traps, That involved, again, Rashi gives you the whole with fishing lines, with maishalach. The bottom line is that there's nothing that catches the fish inside anything. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. That it's not real gazelle. It's only made back in show. So the Mishnah recorded machlekes atanoim. If a child or a shaita or a cheresh finds something, so does he really own it? So the answer is no. He doesn't have the mechanism even to own it. He doesn't have the ability to have a real bialus on it in that Torah. But maybe that can show. A kid finds a piece of bubble gum. So we're going to go grab it away from him. So his father's going to come yelling at me. I'm going to start screaming into a fight. So to prevent that, Chazal said that whenever the child finds it belongs to him, he paid that kishon. So Rabbi Yossi added on, it's gezel gomer, it's mamish gezela. So the Gemara says, Amar Chiz a gezel gomer divrem. The word gezel gomer should not be interpreted to mean it's a deraisa gezela. It's not deraisa. No one can say it's deraisa. What it means is it's an absolute gezela mit the rabbanon. What's the difference? What's the difference whether it's a gezela mit the kisholim, which is the rabbanon, or a gezel gomer mit the rabbanon? So the Gemara, my lefkamin, let's see a bit dayonin. It's chaps and lefkamin. It's a difference. Will we make him give it back? So if it's gezel mit the rabbanon, it's a mamish a real bona fide gezel rabbanon. Mit the rabbanon, we can enforce it. And you have to return it. If it's not a real gezel at all, not even mitzvah rabbanon, it's just that they don't show them. So we're going to encourage people not to do it. We're going to tell you, don't take it, don't do it. And I said, I did it. He owns it. What are you going to do? You didn't do a nice thing. But we can't always enforce a beis din. People are not nice. We can enforce a beis din things that are gezel. The Gemara is only a menachem berosh
the lost item from the kid.
Yeah. The kid picked up the lost item. So the kid was quote unquote zocher on it, but not really, but a Torah. And I went in and I grabbed it out of the kid's hand. So according to Yossi, we're going to make you give it back. And according to the Rabbanan, you're not going to have to. Ani menachem berosh hazayis meshtach the bechulin. So the Mishnah says that if a poor person is banging away at an olive tree and stuff is falling down, and somebody comes in and runs over and grabs it, so technically the person who grabs it owns it because the ani didn't actually pick it up; he wasn't cutting it yet. Tana, but again, we made that shalom. It's not a nice thing to do. Tana imlike v'nosu biyad erez a gezel gomor. But if the ani actually picked it up, he literally picked it up in his hands, even though he may subsequently put it down. So that's a real gezela. So yeah, and of course,
that's a real halachic implication because the avoda of an avoda is not. You know, there's no bylaws to it.
Right, just because I did something, just because I cut something off a tree, that is not a kinyan. I have to actually literally do what I bought to pick it up.
Which is really interesting, because if you use Hilchos Shabbos as a demarcation of how to learn something, he's chayiv on the...
Right, you're chayiv skila for doing it. You're chayiv
skila,
right.
But you don't... Right.
That's right. It's not a steer. That's right. So Tadam, if the audience literally picked up, and Santa Reza goes and goes, but that's a real disaster. If Kahana Habaka Ozil Hutzel, if Kahana was once traveling to Hutzel, Chazil al Gabra, that the Shadi Ufye, the Kornasra and Tamre. So he saw that there was somebody who was banging with sticks and the dates were falling off. Ozil Komankit the Ochel. And Rav Kahana saw those dates and he started to eat those dates. So the person screamed him, Chazi Ma'adi Biyadoish at the Siddur. He said, no, what are you doing? He said, this is. I picked him up, the mamish mine. So it's unclear. Even if Rav Kahana didn't realize that he had actually picked it up, why wasn't he observing the din of the Mishnah? Daki Shem, the Toshis doesn't understand Mishnah in the story. But the way the simple reading of the story is somehow Rav Kahana wasn't addressing that issue. But now the person's yelling at Rav Kahana, I mamish picked it up. So Rav Kahana was very impressed by this guy. He was a regular portion of guy. He wasn't a well-off person who knew the halacha. So Rav Kahana marveled that a regular guy in the street knew this halacha, that if you pick it up in your hands, then you say chanet. So Amale me'asid Rabbi Yeshi ato. He said, you must be from the town of Rabbi Yeshi, was a rav in the city of Chutzal, the Gemara says. So Rabbi Yeshi was such a great Talmid Chacham and such a tzaddik. He gave someone shiur in town. He said, korelei tzaddik yisod olam. So he said, the tzaddik Rabbi Yoshua is the foundation of the world. He said, you must have heard shiur from him. You must have spoken about this in shul. How everybody should know the din, that if you pick it up, then you're zaychan. So he was amazed that the regular guys were familiar with this particular prat in Dine Mamanus. So he didn't say, well, didn't tell him what happened at the end. Obviously, he gave the dates back. But Lamai said he was just more excited to see that Rabbi Yoshua had given shiur this topic. If you see even a non-Jew taking lekach shichon peah, so we're not going to stop him. He's not really entitled to it. He's going to start screaming at the guy. The guy's a poor person, Nebuch. So let him take it. So Tana Rabbanan, we looked at the Brayse, very famous Brayse, Mefardes Amani and Nochi Bnei Yisrael, that if you see poor people, even non-Jews, you should support them. You should, the same way we support together when we support the Jewish Aniyim, we should give money to the non-Jewish Aniyim as well. We should be back at home. If there's this person who's sick, who's a non-Jew, you should go over to him, be back at home to him as well, together when you go to the Jewish patients. The covert makes you nochem, makes you throw. You should bury the non-Jews. Here it doesn't mean him, literally. She said it doesn't mean in the Jewish sector. That means when you take care of the Jewish patients, take care of the non-Jewish patients. Also, make that kishalom. It's also an idea of that kishalom. One has to be careful when it comes to the covert, makes you achom. So one should participate if one has a friend or a colleague, a worker or something who's non-Jewish, who has somebody who dies. One should participate. participate. However, one cannot participate in a religious ceremony. Like if there's a funeral taking place in a religious setting, that's a whole other problem. But here it's just talking about simply just burying them or very common shot people. We all talk about it, to go to a wake. So wakes are permissible to go to because they're not in a church. They're just in a funeral home. So that's there's no religious per se going on. So not only those mutter, I think you're mechuyev to if a person has someone who they know, someone who's a coworker or something. We had a neighbor of ours lived in our block a while ago, whose husband passed away. So she came to tell me about the wake. So I managed this din. So I told people, sure, so I must recover. But I went. It was I guess not the most humorous thing to say that you went to a wake, but it was a humorous event because I came there, I didn't know anybody. I couldn't figure out. The only person I would have known would have been the relatives of the person who I knew. And I'm looking around, stuck out like a sore thumb, you know, my hat and jacket. I'm looking around, and you know anybody there. I'm looking for the lady, and somebody comes up and says, "You look like you're lost." I said, "I definitely am." So I said, "I'm looking for the following family." They said to me, "You're at the wrong wake." He said, "There's a wake upstairs, there's like two we know them. There are two symbols at the same time. The place in Bnei Brak. There are two wakes at the same time. You're in the wrong way." So I didn't know that. I wasn't familiar with that custom of having two wakes at the same time. Anyway, so the bottom line is, so one should try whenever it doesn't interfere with any other halachic issues. One should try to take care of the goyish mesim, take care of the goyish chum, take care of the goyish aniim as well. These was all instituted by Chazal. This is where the Rambam finishes his famous comment. And the Rambam writes that Rebbe Dr. Shalom doesn't mean that because you don't want them to kill us. That's not what Dr. Shalom means. The Rambam writes Dr. Shalom is a good thing. It's not a negative thing. The Rambam writes the fair Dr. Shalom means Shalom. The Rebbe wants there should be peace in the world. The Rebbe Shalom's desire in the world is that there should be peace for the Jews, for the Goyim, for everybody. Rebbe Shalom didn't create a world that should be killing each other. So even these little gestures, there should be things we should take seriously in the way we deal with our non-Jewish neighbors. Okay. All right, be well. Take care, Simon. How we doing? All right, we're hanging.
We're doing.
All right.
Be sure
to
self-purify.
Only in certain. Okay. Be well. Norman, hope to see you tomorrow. Hope the weather's better.
It was being Conan.